Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison.
Woo-woo!
It's always a pause. Like, you've got to work with production.
Can we add those, you know,
we'll just
fake?
Add an applause.
Yeah.
There's no need to fake it. There's four people in here, five people. We all did it together. Then it would just happen, wouldn't it? Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm joined by Romanta Borta and Darwood Grace. Yes. I called you Darwood Grave last week.
Yeah.
That was quite heavy, wasn't it? That's a horrible thing to
bit.
Say.
It was.
I didn't even really apologize. Yeah, I know.
And then you told me it was a great MC name, so I was like, okay.
It was a great MC name. If you had bars and like a mark.
I do have bars! Stop it!
So what? Basically what happened is, and the reason why we've had to edit the podcast down just a little bit, because that was yelling, is because I keep erasing his talents here in my introductions. Yeah? But it's not intentional. It's not.
I'm a human being!
It is not.
I exist! Darwood's life matter.
Oh, that's too funny.
Darwood lives matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I'm also here, joined today by Frankly Boating and Ryan Kelly. One of
the most stylish people on the planet.
I love the purple. Yeah.
How are you, man?
Easily.
I'm well. And yourself?
Do people know that you're Ghanaian?
Yeah, they should.
Yeah,
because it's a brand,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Nah, it's a brand.
You're so chilled.
Yeah, they should know.
Are you saying Ghanaians ain't chilled?
No, Ghanaians are chilled. Your people, Nigerians, are not chilled.
I'm not going to deny
it. You're like the China of Africa. It's just everywhere.
You know what? I'm not sure I have seen a Ghanaian woman on the phone on a bus screaming.
Yeah, that's a Nigerian thing.
It's definitely, it's everywhere else in Africa.
Yeah.
Because
Ghanaian women have
Ghanaian
secrets.
Ghanaian, I think they're kind of a bit more. I heard that little slide. But you know what? You Ghanaians are really kind to Nigerians.
Yeah.
And we're even kinder to you guys.
No, yeah.
100%. We named the bag after you.
but you know why they named the bag?
We donate all our men.
But you know why they named the bag, right?
Like, we're doing all right.
But you know the reason why they named the bag.
Accept it.
We can discuss that. You know the reason why the bag was named that way.
Yeah.
No, because it's diaspora.
You weren't kind in the beginning.
And I don't know. This is like an African thing.
You've got a bag named after you. Do you know how many things get named in history
for a bad reason?
From a horrible story.
Yeah. Yes, it
was. Okay, so they kicked you out of the country. You tried to leave in bags, and then they named the bags after
you. So we
have to
be grateful. We have to be grateful.
He's mocking the forced migration of Ghanaians. Uh-huh.
And we have to be grateful for the bag.
Wow. And the fact that he's met the men date your women. See
we
him?
Donate our men to your women. Hey. My son's Ghanaian.
How,
okay.
How
for real?
Really? 100%. I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
He's pretending to be interested in the fact
No, I didn't know that.
That you're having sexual relationships with these women. Yeah. And he doesn't care.
Like, for some reason, Ghanaian women like Nigerian guys.
All right.
Anyway, so Ryan, hi.
Hey,
I'm going to assume you're Caribbean because your last name is Cameron. The slaves didn't give your name back.
No,
so
they did not.
Here we are. Ta-da!
Wow.
Harrison.
Right.
So how are you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm all right, man. It's a good day.
We met before. We had a conversation with Richard Blackwood. And by the way, Richard Blackwood is like a royalty in blackness.
Yeah, I
always give him a shout out. I feel like there was like 7 famous black people in the 90s and he was probably top 3.
He had his own show.
Yeah.
In a recent time.
I know.
100%.
It's him, Ian Wright, Trevor McDonald, Andy Peters,
Desmond.
Can we throw Lenny in?
We have to
Lenny
throw
Henry.
Lenny.
Yeah, we have to throw Lenny. I've had a massive tribute to Lenny Henry on Jeremy Vine yesterday because I was like, apparently he's stepping down from Comic Relief.
Yes,
give raid to new people, which basically means Mulder Comedian. Yeah. But like, I'm so over the moon of his contributions to all of us. And anyone that watched his sketch show in the 90s, Lenny Henry, was brilliant.
He had this show with Vass Blackwood.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yes.
And his character was Winston.
Yeah. I remember that.
And he was a pirate show DJ.
Vass Blackwood is also a legend.
That guy is a phenomenal
actor. He was in Lockstock, right?
He was in Lockstock, but I had him in It's a Lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know when someone steps in the room and their acting ability just takes it up a level? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I watched all the other actors just take a cue from him. And he basically, what we had written was the scene this way. By the time we watched these first rehearsal, we just moved it over. Let's do it your way.
Yeah.
Like, he turned it into something else. He's a phenomenal actor.
And Franklin, thank you so much for joining us. So you are like king of trainers, king of swag. You bullied JD Sports into changing their name.
No,
and you're like so popular online. So by the way, I had no idea about any of this. You were just a really nice guy in the group. And I was just like, this guy's so nice.
See, I only know you because of A-Side.
Oh, okay.
That whole connection. Oh, okay, when they were telling me who the other players were, like, your name just kept coming up.
So you're a cultural... How do you explain what you do?
I don't know. Recently, someone called me Mr. X. So it's really hard for me to define in words. It's more actions.
Yeah.
Like, you know, helping relaunch Averex and having queues down the street and having the store and putting it back into the culture
and that explains, it's
a lot of just putting pieces of the puzzle together and showing it physically.
So we know about Averex obviously being the like visual representation of wealth as under 21 in the 90s. How people acquired that wealth was irrelevant. It's not like a part of the brand.
The jackets were £450.
That was a month's salary at Woolworths. I don't know what the hell people were doing to get one of those things, but I definitely couldn't afford them.
I had two Averexes, one of them was brought. And then the second one
was taken?
No, it was my older brother's one.
Oh, okay.
But it was an A2, so that one was actually made in the 40s. For the pilots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I've still got that one.
Yeah, Did you guys find it? I was just about to say replicas.
Averex is actually... So Averex started off as a replica World War II company.
Yeah.
And it's going to be their 50th anniversary next year.
Wow.
And yeah, we have found some old ones. So like people know it from Top Gun. So the original Top Gun, that's an Averex jacket, and they make the pilot jackets for the US Army as well.
I just thought it was just roadmen looking amazing.
Basically, what happened is they went into sports, that's when they started doing sports.
It was college, college football.
So is there a relationship between Averex and, you know, like in 112's music video when they all had the bicycles? Is that
no, that's not Averex. That's not Averex.
But is there a connection to that time? Like, were they competing? What was the name of that brand? I can't remember. It's an A. Is it
Academics?
No,
I know what you're talking about. It was one of them.
So what is the goal
for Alpha?
It could be Alpha.
Alpha Industries, yes, it is, because they used to have the other jackets. Yeah. So what's the goal for Averex now? Because obviously it just means a lot, but I suppose re-establishing meaning now is different.
Well, they relaunched, 2022. I helped them with the store and trying to give them more cultural relevance. It's their 50th anniversary next year, so just try to more of the same things, like putting in the right places on the right people and stuff, and like kind of letting people know that we're actually 50 years old. I mean, I bought my first Averex in 28 years ago.
Yeah.
So that shows my age. So to let people know that it's come back around, you know, from the times in the 90s and things like that. You know what I mean? So
you know what I think kind of hurt Averex a little bit when guys were wearing like the huge ones. So it was coming down to
the 5XLs.
But that was just American influence, period. That whole time was horrific. There would never be a time when you can look back and be like, that was lit, you know. It would never happen again. 4 or 5X tops and white tees.
You know who's still got his one? Big Ted.
Yeah.
He's slim now, but he's still got the huge jacket. Because we had a discussion last year. I swear you was there.
Where was it?
I can't remember where we were. Mm. We was all just talking, and he just brought up the Averitt jacket and how he still got his old one.
Okay.
Might have been that one at Emil's screenings.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. I might not be in that conversation, but I was definitely there. Yeah.
So what we'll talk about in this session is we have playwright Ryan Cameron here, who wrote for boys, for black boys who have considered suicide when the hue gets too heavy.
Yes.
My guy, that title is very long. What's the why all those words in that title? Because as a broadcaster,
yeah,
my mouth is la 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 for black boys. You
for black boys for sure. I read Entesar Kishange's seminal work for Colored Girls.
Sick, by the way.
Maybe about 10, 12 years ago now, man. As a drama student, I was going through plays that were written by black people for black people. And I read for Colored Girls, and I remember just being with it for about a week. Just going, my days, I didn't know that we were allowed to express ourselves this way, right? And then after that, I went and did research. Like, you know when you watch a good film, when you read a good book, you're like, I need to know how this was made and how it impacted. And, you know, that was a play that came out in New York in the 1970s. And just seeing how it influenced black women and artists in general over that time. And I was like, seeing the way that it made people feel. Imagine if we had something like that here that could articulate our experience. And then specifically at that time, I'm watching a lot of, any black play was American, you know, August Wilson kind of stuff that came over here. And I saw myself trying to relate, but going, actually, the black British experience is so nuanced. It doesn't particularly speak about, do you know what I mean? Yeah. To me, living in South. And then from that point on, I was like, we need something. And I let it go because I was like, look, man, this is an incredible piece of work. I don't even want to try and even do that. Do you know what I mean? And then 2013, Trayvon Martin passed. And I remember hearing a lot of discourse in public about like, oh, yeah, but he had a hood on. And I was like, well, what does that mean? Because I'm a black boy in a hood. Do you know what I mean? So that mean that? Do you know what I mean? I was like, rah, like, now more than ever, I need to be able to articulate what it really means to be a young black man in this country. And then years passed again. No, I wrote half of it. So the first half of the play I wrote, and then I put it down because it just felt unfinished. Like, there were just too many unanswered questions. And I came back to it 6 years later as a father, as a married man, as somebody that owned a business. And I was like, rah. All of the things that I couldn't answer before, all of the frustrations I had as a young man trying to piece this together came from a lack of love or understanding what love is or understanding how to love and how different that could be if somebody could actually see me as a human being. And I was like, boom, that's the beginning of my second act. It speaks to the first act in that way. And then I put it down again. I was like, this is too much, too much. And then the pandemic happened. And that was the last piece I needed. It was like, look at the mental health of my brothers. And this is the thing that I couldn't understand at the time, right? You look at somebody when you're growing up and you're going, oh, he's just, that brother's just a bit this or he's a bit that, or he's just a grumpy guy. And you're like, whoa, 20 years later, I can actually see that that looks like that's anxiety or depression or actually this is, why does he always go this way after smoking weed? Okay, this might be a psychosis, do you know what I mean? And I was like, okay, now I can finish this piece. So it's a piece that's taken 12 years to put together, you know, about coming of age stories of six young black men who meet in group therapy. Yeah.
It's really powerful because I think I've seen it and I remember just being moved and for 2 days. It's interesting because there's a couple of things. There was like, when I left outside in the foyer, there was specifically women who just had no idea men experience things in this way. And I wonder if it's our own fault that we've done a massive disservice to ourselves in pretending that all of this stuff is easy and benefits us and that we just coast through.
Because
sometimes when I listen to women, like I can see how, I agree with everything they're saying. I'm like, I can see that, I can see that. But no one ever asks why. Why are you that person? And it wasn't until I sat down with like a black superhero roadman that I grew up near. And we did a podcast together. And he spoke about his childhood, spoke about his home. He spoke about his brothers and the legacy of having older brothers who were outside doing a lot and what he had to become to do that. And he was just blasé just saying it. But he was saying it in his way. But like, I was like, I never really thought about why you were this way.
Yeah.
Like, why did you become so? Because you're also like a really nice guy, great at football, but you're also like, if you're not in a good day, it's the longest place to be if anywhere near you. And all those things were true. Yeah. And I think we just robbed so much of ourselves from the conversation.
100%.
Like building capacity.
100%.
Like, what do you hope to achieve when people leave? Like, what would you like for it to be understood?
Humanity. Jeremy, that's what you're talking about here. We're not afforded humanity. We're not allowed to be three, four-dimensional, you know. We're not allowed to be. So it's like, even if we're talking about narratives, and one of the main reasons why I needed to put it together is because I wanted to have some control over our narrative, right? It's like, cool, yeah, that brother might be in a gang or whatever, but how did he get there? What is his backstory? And not, do you know what I mean? He didn't just come out of the womb and was like, boom, 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 let me shut up. Do you know what I mean? There were certain events that happened in this man's life that made him go down this road, right? And I'm not against all the stuff that's out there, but I'm like, give us some nuance and some context. And I think for me, at the end of it, I want young black brothers to understand that you are more than what they say you are or what you've told yourself. You are fully formed and fully human. And for anybody else that's outside of our community to be able to understand us a little bit better and to be able to go, we are fully real human beings. Yeah, do you know what I mean? That should be afforded all of the, you know what I mean? The pros and cons of life.
Just to speak what you just said, I was with you when we watched the play the first time in the West End. And I remember women specifically speaking in the foyer. It's like, there's so many nuances. I have to go home and I have to like sit with what they are. But like, I never knew that most of these things men go through.
Exactly.
And then they kind of like huddled. They kind of like huddled around you and some other guy you were talking to, trying to get perspective of what the men are thinking about the play.
I checked out, by the way.
And this also adds to the other night we were watching The Kitchen. And the women in the space, so we have movie clubs. And then the women in the space were so incredibly frustrated at the lack of words between the men in the movie. And we were like, we wanted more, we needed more, and that child deserved more. And we were really frustrated. But the men in the room were like, we get it. There was a look in his eye, and there was a nod, and there was a and I think it's the distance between not having the words, but having all of the experiences, and then having the people that live with you, right next to you, living life parallel with you, whether it's your family, your partner, your children, they don't know that.
100%.
Because there's a wall between you two. And I think that was very obvious in the play, that you wanted to say, look at the color spectrum of who we are.
Exactly.
I'm not speaking for women, but the women in the room would have loved to see that verbally.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what it brings brought for me, because it made me understand a little bit more, have empathy, have understanding, but also if this cup looks like it's cold, until you tell me this is super hot, I'm just gonna be like, oh, exactly.
Where does that man in general get that language, right? If he's not afforded that, you have to learn that from somewhere, and I hope that's what. For me, like leaving that auditorium, that we gain new understanding and language to be able to go. I did an interview last year, and I was like, the first time I ever spoke about love with another man was age 25.
Wow.
And like, you know, we could talk about girls, do you know what I mean? But it would be like, oh, that girl, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was in a certain way where we could objectify a woman, because it meant that I didn't have to have any feelings for her, because if I had feelings, then I'm weak and I'm not a man. And being a man and a big black man is everything, right? Because that's what they tell you, right? So that's everything. Yeah. And the first time someone ever said, how are you feeling? I was 25. No, not how you doing, what are you saying, bro? But how are you feeling? And I remember, I couldn't answer it. I was like, because I don't have the language to articulate, how do I feel? I just move. Even now, like some of the conversations with my wife, but like she'll say something and I'll be like, cool. Where do we need to go? How do we need to sort it out? I don't have the intellect. I don't have the language to be able to go, okay, all she wants me to do is sit down and listen. But I'm like, no, I'm a man, I've got a always solution-based, right? So, you know, now I'm trying to learn from writing this, because this is my therapy, you know? Going, okay, cool, I can't write all of this massive text and not actually be a part of the process. Do you know what I mean?
Franklin, when was the first time that you evolved beyond just doing? Because I think errors matter, by the way. I think if you're like 30 and under right now, there's way more dialogue for experience. 100%. And for just whoever you are, it's like, yeah, that's cool, man. Like, I remember seeing like men with handbags like 4 years ago in a club. And like, I realized how heavily programmed I am. Like, they were genuine, just women's handbags, but they were sick. But I was like, what's going on? Like, it wasn't a rejection. It was like, no, but what's, how did we get here? Where was the breadcrumbs? It wasn't like we went, like, it went man bags, which were holding things. Then we went into full on handbags. Yeah. How did we get here? Yeah. And I feel like every 5 years, there's a cultural jump. And I feel like if you're, the closer you are to 50 and beyond, the less of those tools you just have. Like, my brother is like mid 40s. And his way of dealing with things is so powerfully simple, because there was no space for big concepts when he was coming up. It was just like, I say yes, no, come close, go away. Like, it's just simple as that. He doesn't have the nuance of like, well, actually today I'd like you to be close to me, but tomorrow I feel like I would like you over there because I think you're doing too much. Like, he's just like, I deleted all my apps. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I saw 3 articles. It sounded stupid. I'm deleting all my apps. I'll check them out in 3 months' time to see if the news is better. That's where his head's at now. Yeah. When did you first come into like emotional intelligence?
Oh God.
How old are you, by the way? Because you're youthful young.
How do you think I am?
No, I'm going to permanently say that you look about 42, between 38 and 42.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm going to be 45. I'm 44 at the moment. Yeah. So. Yeah,
it's a beautiful man. It's a good looking black man on this thing.
Could have said he was 29.
I'll take a picture after.
Hold on.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You need the female vote.
How else to get the female vote for dark skinned men? It works. It's the truth.
It's because you yelled it.
Sometimes I have to have a direct message.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I don't even know. You know, I'll be honest. I would like to think probably when I turned around 30. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm still there. I think after my dad passed.
How long ago was that?
2021 September.
I
I don't know if I've. I don't know. I'll be honest. I'm still in that process of like, got to get things. I don't. You know. Now I've had my son. I tried to. It's funny because I think my dad said I love you once in his whole life, right? And I think that's when I graduated. Something like that. Yeah.
But he display it to you.
Yeah.
Did he display it?
He did. And that's the thing. Yeah. And I realized even with me in relationships, people say, Frank, you don't say I love you, but you, and I said, do you feel it? And I don't think that's the right answer sometimes.
Yeah. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
But they do feel it. But what I do for my son especially is...
How old is your
son? He's 9. I tell him I love him. Even to the point where he's now like, ooh, you know those... Yeah, you know when they get to that age?
My son's eight.
So you get to that age where they don't want to say, you know. And I say it. So I'm on the phone to him and I'm like, I love you. And he doesn't even reply because, you know, but I want to install it so much in him that he doesn't have the complex that I have. And to just, you know what I'm saying? So... I'll be honest, the truth of it is I don't know.
Do you hug him?
Yeah.
and kisses.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And he hates it.
No, no. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's, not, it's not optional.
That's it. 100%.
100%. 100%. When they get older,
they're gonna thank you.
100%.
I know. Yeah. I know. Because my mum is on the other hand. She did all the things, the hugging and all that. But my my dad. Yeah, he was proper hardcore Ghanaian, and I don't blame him at all. I don't blame him at all because when they came to this country, they were in survival mode.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that 100%. People can't even put words.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm trying to 100%. Say? So 100%. For me, I don't blame him. He did what he had to do.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is.
From your perspective, what did you lose out on? Like, as a result of like that emotional development not necessarily happening until you're 30 or even really still figuring it out now, what's the loss? Because people don't understand what the loss is.
Do you know what? The loss for me, it's hard to kind of put it in words, if I'm honest. I don't feel that I've lost much in terms of a detachment, or, you know, I don't think I've lost much, but I feel that it's made me a bit cold, if that makes any sense. Like, where I can just, and I think, I'll be honest, I think it's more the fact I grew up in a time, like, you know, where I grew up in Tottenham. I lost a lot of my best friend got murdered when I was 15, and a lot of, you know, everyone knows the story about Tottenham. I grew up in that that period. It just made me a bit like cold, and
you lost warmth.
Yeah, a little bit. If I'm honest, I did.
I think people don't understand what that then means when they're like, you're put into a family situation, or you're meant to have like depth of affinity with your partner. Like, it really struggles to open up. Like, I can't believe that I was so open for information, but I didn't have a clue until I was probably 5 years into my relationship that included a marriage. So I was like halfway into it, and I was I'm discovering it now. I think I've done this the wrong way. And I was so ready from literally from young to find out any bit of information that will help that become more successful. At the time of, you know, getting into that relationship, getting married, I thought I had it all. I remember sitting there thinking like, well, I've got all the tools. I've got all the perspectives I need. Then you press go. It's almost like a factory line. Like, you build this factory and you're like, oh, this is going to make the most perfect car at the end. And you press go. And then like the door falls off. The paint's the wrong. Like, it just starts, things start breaking. And you're like, right, I can't even drive this. And you have to go back to the beginning and start again. Like, what were some of the moments where you were just like, I think the question is like, something isn't right here. Like, did you have that moment where something isn't right here around your 30s?
You know, it's really, because like, I think with me, because I work so hard, I don't, I'll be honest, I think it's a trauma. I don't get time to sit down and actually think about myself. I'm always thinking about what's the next thing, and what's the next thing. And I think that in itself is bad. But then, I tell you what, so sometimes society doesn't let black men cry. Do you get what I mean? So
almost
when,
all the time.
Yeah. So when you know, and it's funny, I was leaving a comment on I was leaving a comment on I'm gonna forget her name. I don't wanna forget her name. Social commentator, female.
Kelechi.
No, not Kelechi. ZZ Mills. ZZ. Sorry if you're watching this.
That's a ZZ.
Yeah. So, and she said something about men being vulnerable, et cetera, on her page. And I put a comment saying, but will women respect a man if he cried? Do you get what I mean? And then she said she would if it was like, if he just didn't, you know, to allow him to be emotionally, you know,
vulnerable.
But then I think one of our other friends, he came in and said, no, you shouldn't cry in front of women. What's the point unless someone dies? But then we're kind of vilified in some respect. Like when Tyrese went through a clear mental breakdown.
That was a very real reference, a clear mental breakdown
in public. That has become like a meme that people just mock. And, you know, so sometimes that, as black men, we're guarded so that we don't get to that position, you know.
I think black male vulnerability just is a weakness. Like, it's not a weakness, but it is when you start taking it out. It's not even that it's seen as, because it then directly changes how the reality that you have. Like, we know that it's important for us to cry. And actually, I've had many men cry in my space or on the phone to me and be like, this is just hard. And But I know that if we were doing this in a public forum, there'll be an element of respect. Mm-hmm. But I know there's a deep down, there's a thing that's I could take him or he can't
but,
tell me
but
nothing.
But this is
or,
the thing. This is the thing. I've done Russell's podcast and I was talking about my dad's passing and I cried in that podcast. First time I've ever done it. Cried in that podcast.
Is this knee, you mean?
Knee. Yeah, knee. Yeah. And
her name was Russell as well.
Yeah, Russell.
Making the adjustment. Yeah,
so when I cried on his podcast, we were talking about loss of all our dads. We passed, our dads passed and Mikey and was on there and we all cried on that podcast. Mm. And people came to me, like people I don't know, they came to me and they said, I saw you on that. Mm. And it was the most powerful thing I've ever seen in my life. And they hugged me. And I was like, wow, this is the first time I've experienced this where I've expressed vulnerability in public and people actually don't look at you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The times are changing.
And that was a good thing.
I wanted to say what I specifically saw in that play and something that's not necessarily a reality for most men is the friends comforting one another when they did have the vulnerabilities.
Exactly.
So I was wondering how you wanted to touch on spaces for men. Marvin has spaces where men can just be safe and be vulnerable in them.
Yeah.
But it's not everywhere, right? Mm. And like you say, it's like a ha ha ha, look at him, he's a punk or he's a, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are these spaces where men can be vulnerable?
Well, I think that's the kind of discourse that I want from this play is that we need them, you know? And I feel like in the context of my play, it's a group therapy, you know? But what I want from it is to go, no, I know you and I know you. We should be each other's keeper, man. Do you know what I mean? And like, that it should be everywhere. And I think what we're talking about is crying being a weakness. I actually see it as a strength. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Agree. If I see you crying in front of me, I go, right, you're a fool. You're a real man. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like to be able to, that takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to be able to go, this is how I'm feeling right now. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I'm still me, you know? Whereas I know a lot of these younger guys who are bottled up and they can't, you know, I could see the weakness, man.
Yeah, man. Because that is actually real weakness.
Exactly.
When you're so afraid of what people are going to say.
Exactly.
About you,
exactly.
Like you are on you can't express how you truly feel.
Exactly.
Knowing that how you truly feel, if it's let out, you will feel better immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a trick that all kids learn, but somehow men are told, stop using this tool that will better you because everyone will see you as weak.
Exactly. But do you know what? To be honest, I see more harmfulness in white men. Like
what
in
you
a
mean? Yeah,
because they really don't have any outlet. It's such a weird thing. Like I actually know men who speak to each other, like black men. We come together and we'll be like, "Bro, this is mad." Because I think the intensity of our experience is so hard. Yeah. You have to have an outlet. You've got to be honest. Like, and there are a group of men who just definitely do not.
Yeah,
but all the black men I know speak. Yeah. And then when I do this work in white spaces, they're like, even the successful men are like, wow, I've never heard this in my life. Like they got nothing. Mm-hmm. And so to them, there's like a quiet, consistent of just holding it in.
100%.
You think it's because we're in survivor mode and we're aware that we're in survivor mode?
We have no other choice.
Yeah.
Like I feel like in whiteness, there's like a level of success that the world pretends that you have.
Yeah, 100%.
Or you think you have it.
Yeah,
so
what
am I got to complain about? But then you hear these men, like you hear these hardback men, these working class men who be like their dad dying, they're trying to keep it together.
Yeah.
And you can see them breaking, but they're fighting themselves. Like, I just let it happen.
Yeah.
And so there is, maybe that goes across race, but I specifically know white men of all intersections don't
and
have
generations
that
as well, I think, as well. I think something that you can do now, do you know what I mean? You can talk to your, but at school, you know, when I was at school, there weren't no forum where we could come together and be like, yeah, I'm feeling like this today, bro.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? Like now
it's
I can do that.
Straight,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And even something you were saying as well, like even now, like, you know, as a father and as a married man, I think that's allowed me to really tap into vulnerability because, you know, as a man, I always had a space to be able to go into and duck and hide. When you're married with someone and you share a house and you share a family and you share a bed, do you know what I mean? There's no way. So I had to go, okay, cool. I'm going to have to find a way or a language to be able to be open with you. Otherwise, this ain't going to work, you know? So, I think in maturity, there are more spaces for us now, man.
Yeah.
I've got to say, on the crying thing, because we've all got sons and whatnot, and teaching them how to cry, as society starts telling them you shouldn't be crying, because I allow my sons to cry. I've never said stop crying, blah, 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 because I think that sends a message, even with my four-year-old, when he sits with me and he's crying, I'm like, oh, you feel sad? All right, cool. Do you want to speak about why you're feeling sad?
Yeah.
And whatnot. Okay, well, we'll keep let it go. Let it keep coming out until you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just sit with
That's
him
good.
And that. But it's more what I want to say to men is learn how to cry like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And that, so that you don't cry with your head down like that. Mm-hmm. You cry with your head up. Because
mm-hmm.
it's...
What difference do you think that fundamentally makes?
Basically, it takes you away from the trauma that you suffered when you was thinking, because people like to hide their tears and whatnot. Whereas if you cry upwardly, there's still a sensing of pride in you crying.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not having to face the issues of worrying about what people are thinking about you because you've got your own pride and take pride in your crying. Like, I'm letting this out. This will be better for everybody around me if I let this emotion go.
I think just processing that in real time is sometimes just being able to momentarily collapse. And I'm thinking about this in real time.
Yeah.
And just because I think sometimes the fear is that if men all cry, who's going to do stuff or something? Like, who's going to do the stuff? Yeah?
So, like, women cry all the time and we still get stuff done. You know what I mean?
So it's like, I feel like the fear is when you hear red pill men.
To men.
I know.
No, but when you hear red pill men talking about what are you crying for? You got to do. It's like, well, I can take 5 minutes out crying and go still do. What do you think I do? Like, 100%. Go unemployed now because I cried?
Well, that was our process. That was our process during this play. Mm. We all cried together and imagine we've all come to this as young men, right? And none of us were like, I ain't crying. I don't know you. Do you know what I mean? Throughout that play, every single process, there were moments where we cried together, we hold each other and we go, let's go, guys. Yeah. Let's go. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the core.
But my question is, Lee, can we just collapse, though? Can we just, like even the idea of a notion of there's a way to cry, puts pressure on, like, remembering that at a moment of vulnerability. Like, I remember losing my aunt at 16. And there's, you know she's gone in the hospital. We did the 3 days of visiting. We did the 9 nights together all together, which ends up being a bit of a vibe, actually. And then you get to the point of the funeral.
Yeah.
And then her coffin came out of the car. And it's the first time it landed. I even saw her in the home, like, embalmed. I saw it. And then something was just about the coffin going into the church. I just broke.
And I
made out a really loud squeal.
Yeah.
And I felt really selfish because it's not my mother. It's like my godmother. It's everyone's favorite aunt. I had the best godparents, just so everyone knows. But like, I was so devastated that this beautiful woman, like, she was such a warm element in our family and in many ways the glue. So seeing her in the box going into the church was the moment. And I wheeled.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I would never want to figure out a conscious way of how I should have done that.
No, but I think what you're saying is, you cried, you were like, I'm bold in my crying. Yeah. But I think what a lot of us do is we go, I'm going to hide in a little corner now because now I'm conscious that you guys are seeing me cry and I'm losing part of my manhood doing that.
Yeah,
you know what you're saying? It's like, nah, be bold in it. Do you know what I mean? I'm crying because I love this person and I should be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
I think my question... Oh, sorry.
And it's not asking for permission.
Exactly.
Because sometimes when you're proud in how you are being and how you're acting, you don't ask for permission. You just do.
Yeah.
And whereas... hiding it is the antithesis of that.
Yeah.
It's like it's opposite. Yeah, so just what you did at your aunt's funeral was apt and whatnot.
I think what I wanted to add about the safe spaces, I mentioned it in the context of where can men go to have those safe spaces, but you mentioned that your partner lives with you,
in the
house with you, in the same bed with you, driving in the same car perhaps, and you can't hide from your feelings with your partner. And a video that I saw, maybe on TikTok, somewhere on social media, was men saying, oh, we can't be vulnerable, can't cry in front of women because they'll hold it against you. Now, I know that because men's vulnerability is something that society, but women in intimate relationships are not used to from men, we don't know how to handle it. So we can't hold your vulnerabilities because it's so rare that we get to see it. It's like this... you know, a gemstone that, you know, that we see and we're like, oh my God, it's, what do I do with this? And very often, if women are cunning or just, you know, not interested in you anymore, don't like you anymore, those vulnerabilities then become a weapon. And I think when we speak about safe spaces for men, it's not just with other men, it's also in the intimate homes. And there are men who would say, I'd rather take those elsewhere, as you said earlier. Like, if I do come with that gemstone to you, that's not my heart, but that's something else that I'm coming with you.
100%.
And it's used against me. I'm scarred. Mm-hmm. I'm scarred and I will never be vulnerable and open up again.
People don't understand that part where, like, if you break that trust with a man, it will just be locked away with that particular person.
But it's selfish because men break women's trust all the time. True. But a woman breaks a man's trust once, we will clam up.
Yeah, but it's the context. Like, as you said, the context of our giving this stone over is under a lot more pressure.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, a woman can cry and stand in the middle of the street, cry, and people will stop, get off buses, stop cars, and go over and be like, are you okay?
Yeah.
If they see a man doing the exact same thing, he'll be completely ignored. It's like, is he going to lose it and try to kill
me? Yeah, that's
like,
yeah,
so,
that's
so true. The reality is, it's like, when men do give it, and I always think, whenever you're changing something in terms of societal perception, you've got to know the root signs of something.
Yeah.
And if you ignore those, then you will never grow and develop their relationship. And I think there's other examples where women talk about believe black women or believe women. Mm. There are elements of, you have to really listen and pay attention to the behaviors of people and men around women. And if you hear something a couple of times, you have to pay attention to it. And I feel like for us, that's the exact same thing with our emotion and our crying. We have to be able to do that. To basically wrap it up, what would everyone's advice be to other men? And I think anybody living amongst men who are living quite heavily right now, what would you say to them? And obviously, and it'd be great for you to close us out and let us know a bit more about the play. We'll start with Franklin and we'll go this way around.
Cool. I guess what I would say is, it is okay to express yourself. It is okay to speak about your feelings. It's very important that we get to that place where we can say, look, I'm not okay. And be able to cry freely. Aras, we're just going in circles because we see it in society. We see a lot of our young black boys doing things to each other when it could just be a conversation. Do you know what I mean? You know, this, what's happening now in society, doesn't have to happen if people just got in a room and be like, why are you upset with me? That's it. And then, you know, and have that conversation. So,
Mine is just to create your own groups. I think often there are groups like ours that are really highly visible, but actually just get five friends together and just say, or even five friends, you can get five strangers together. But you do need some sort of rules and guidance as to what the space is. Otherwise, it will turn into a football group very quickly. And so it's important just to make sure that you're like, this is the space for, like, how are you doing today? Check-ins. And then you'll start to see that it will become successful, and just make sure you look after the people in it.
Yeah.
Mine is two-sided for women who are partnered with men, to respect the vulnerable space that they are given and to carry it with as much weight as that man giving you his heart. And then for men to allow us to see that, because that makes us love you and understand you on a deeper level that we ever could by you just providing and protecting for us.
Yeah, my advice is don't bottle things in. Every time I bottle stuff in, I end up trying to harm myself and take myself off the planet or having those thoughts. So don't bottle stuff in, start talking, start sharing, because as soon as I share, I'm always wary of sharing and burdening someone else, and that's probably why I stop myself from sharing. But I know that the harm that I will cause my family will be way more than the harm I can cause them by sharing. And sometimes that preoccupation and overthinking of trying to figure out what someone else is thinking is never aligned with actually the reality of what's happening. So do talk.
Powerful. Thank you.
Just echoing what everyone said, man. You know, I think for us, understanding that there's nothing new under the sun, right? And a moment that a lot of the time we get into our heads because we believe that no one else is going through this, and this means that we're different or we're weak or we're all going through it, you know, and opening your mouth and having those kind of conversations and realizing that, you know, your brothers are all going through it too. And maybe this guy's got a method or somebody else is giving you a tip or something, but, you know, keep those conversations going. Let's lift each other up.
Indeed.
Please tell us more about the show.
For black boys who have considered suicide, when the hue gets too heavy, is at the Garrick in the West End from the 29th of February this month, man, up until the 4th of May. It is joyous. I call it a black boy fantasia. You know, it's the like you're saying, it's the antithesis, man. It's, yeah, we're going through stuff, but actually there's so many reasons why we should keep each other up and stay alive. So that's what the play kind of represents.
Powerful.
Well done, man.
So are you going to be like a millionaire? Do I need to order stuff with you? What happens?
I say, get the orders in quick. Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be a Netflix deal announced in a couple of months. Just to know that I don't act, but I can do extra work. Okay,
yeah,
I
want to be
right in the kitchen. Like,
I actually do that. So when the Netflix thing comes,
I'm there.
The global deal.
Great beard.
All of a sudden, he's going to get a global deal. It's going to be like Idris Elba trying to get hold of him. It's going to be like hard work. Cool,
isn't it? It's all good, man.
Nah, thank you everyone for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.